Hey there, billionaire. Yep, I'm talking to you. If you expect to live another 31 years, you're already a billionaire. Not in money, but in the real measure of wealth. Time. That's because 31 years is roughly a billion seconds. But most of us waste time in ways we'd never waste money. The currency of time billionaires is micro moments. The 90-second to 15-minute gaps hidden between the structured parts of your day. This podcast is about reclaiming them with quick, research-backed ideas to help you feel more creative, productive, and alive. Welcome to Time Billionaires. Let's make your next micro moment count. Let me ask you something. Have you ever spent more time dreading a problem than it would have taken to just deal with it? Or ruminated on a small mistake you wish you'd handle differently? Lying awake at night, playing out possible future scenarios and how you want to handle them? Or replaying conversations that didn't go the way you wanted them to and thinking about what you could have said instead? You're not alone. And here's the kicker. While you're wasting energy that could be used for sleep or solving real problems in the present moment, your brain actually thinks it's helping. A 2021 study by Dr. Helmut Karim and colleagues at the University of Pittsburgh reveals why this feels so draining in the short term and so damaging in the long run. Using neuroimaging, they found that the more someone engages in repetitive negative thinking, the type that drives anxiety and rumination, the older their brain appears, regardless of their actual age. In other words, the more time we spend in anxious loops and critical self-thoughts, the more wear and tear we put in our brain. I've had diagnosed anxiety disorders for most of my life, and I know what this trap feels like. Here's one example. I used to get extremely anxious before going mountain biking with my husband Tyler and our friends. I'd worry about crashing and injuring myself or not being able to keep up and embarrassing myself. Like I'd somehow ruin the ride for everyone just by being slower or more cautious. And the one time I did actually have a bad crash and thought I'd broken my elbow. The pain and limited motion I had to deal with in the weeks after were real, but honestly, it was a lot easier to deal with that than the anxiety I'd rehearsed all the way up the mountain and the days prior to the ride. I suffered way more from the anxiety than I did from the injury. And what's worse, all that anxious tension I carried into the moment made me more likely to crash in the first place. My muscles were tight, my reflexes were off, and I was second-guessing every turn. The thing I was trying so hard to prevent became more likely because I was trying so hard to avoid it. That's the trap of anxiety. And it's not just personal. In business too, our attempts to control outcomes often backfire in the worst ways. When we're afraid of failure, it's easy to think that trying to exert more control will lead to better outcomes. But because we can only directly control small subsets of inputs, this often leads to our teams focusing on the wrong minutiae instead of remaining nimble to hit overall goals. I had a professor at UCLA once say, "You won't like the results of accountability that comes from controlling workers harder." He was right. Control is like water. The more you tighten your grip, the more it slips through your fingers. That's what anxiety does. It masquerades as responsibility or preparedness, but at its core, it's just fear. Fear dressed up in a productivity costume. A 2020 study by Yoshida and colleagues published in Neuroimage Clinical used functional MRIs to show that anxiety and rumination activate overlapping neural circuits, especially in areas involved in self-referential thinking and emotional regulation. That's part of why both can feel so sticky, like we're trapped in an endless loop. But while they co-occur and often feel alike in the moment, they're not the same. Anxiety is fear-based and future-focused, a hypervigilance about what might go wrong. Rumination is repetitive thinking about distress, usually about the past, but it also fixates on imagined futures. And by definition, neither one is rooted in the present. We can experience anxiety when we fear something bad will happen, or that something we want won't happen. But here's the thing. Not getting what we want isn't automatically a problem. A problem is something that blocks a need, a value, or basic functioning, something that genuinely requires a solution. Not getting what we want is just discomfort. And yet we live in a time of near limitless control and choice. We've been conditioned by convenience, digital comparison, and customization to expect that if we want something, we should be able to get it. So when we don't, our brains treat it like a problem that must be solved. But that's a fallacy we can interrupt. There's nothing wrong with desire, but it becomes destructive when we mistake every unmet desire as a problem to be fixed. Wanting something and not having it may feel uncomfortable, but it doesn't always demand action. We won't get everything we want, and that's not failure, that's just life. Sometimes the real growth comes from sitting with that discomfort, understanding it, and just choosing to let it be. And I think all of us can probably imagine times where we didn't get something we wanted, and in hindsight, it turned out much better that way. So that makes anxiety about future situations, which may or may not happen and aren't really problems if they do, even more potentially destructive. When I catch myself spiraling into anxiety about not getting something I want in the future, for example, anxiety that the book I'm currently writing won't get published, I remember Anne Lamott's quote in her book Bird by Bird, "If you're not enough before the gold medal, you won't be enough with it." There's nothing we could do, receive, or achieve that will make us feel whole or happy if we aren't already whole and happy in ourselves. We're human beings, not human doings, after all. Here's the thing, though. Anxiety and rumination often feel useful in the moment, and even responsible. It feels like we're protecting ourselves from threats or learning from mistakes. But that's a trap. Because all of those mental rehearsals and what-ifs and hypotheticals, they don't actually make us stronger. They make us tired. They drain the energy we need for the parts of life we can actually influence. When we live in a state of worry, we're experiencing very real stress symptoms, which are a form of suffering. These look like increased cortisol, tense muscles, and cognitive impairments like decreased patience and focus. And over time, that chronic stress doesn't just affect our mood. It affects our health and longevity, our memory, our confidence, our aspirations, and even our relationships. So what do we do when we get caught in anxiety and rumination loops? We come back to the present, and we shift the story we're telling ourselves about what we need to do to achieve the results we want. Here are three micro-moment exercises to help. The first one is a personal ritual I use all year long. I call it the gratitude jar, but it's basically just a mason jar in my kitchen that I keep there along with a stack of post-it notes. At least once a week, I write down one good thing that happened that week, something joyful or surprising or just quietly meaningful or fun. These have looked like April 25th, walk with Dara, Sam, Lauren, and Quinn down Taylor Boardwalk, June 10th, live fire cooking with the Hulentes, December 1st, positive pregnancy test. I fold up the note, drop it in the jar, and go about my day a little more grounded. Then, on December 30th, Tyler and I open all the notes from the year. We read them aloud, reminisce, and look for forgotten photos on our phones to match the days. Then we transfer the notes into a notebook. That notebook becomes a low-lift time capsule I love flipping through years later. It reminds me that the best moments are often unexpected, and that anxiety has never predicted my future, as well as gratitude has captured my past. The second exercise you can think of as the rumination reframe. It's a mindset shift that's helped me tremendously. When you catch yourself ruminating over a past mistake, pause and thank your brain. Say something like, "Thanks, brain, for trying to protect me. But this story isn't helping anymore." I like to imagine my inner critic as a well-meaning but just dramatic friend. They're trying to help, but they're not focused on the right details. You wouldn't shame a friend for trying to help, at least I hope not, but you'd probably say something like this, "Hey, I get why you're upset. But we've learned from it, and we're okay now." This small act of acknowledgement softens the tension and shifts you from fear and frustration into acceptance and self-compassion. Studies show that this reduces cortisol levels and primes your brain to be more receptive to creative problem solving, which will actually make you more likely to handle the situation well in the future. It's also why doing things like listing three small recent wins for the day or simply focusing on your breath can help. It snaps your awareness back to the realities of now, which is safer than the mental simulations we're spinning in our heads. The third one you can call regret reversal. And I think it's important to start with an overlooked component of regret. Regret is a form of perfectionism. And perfectionism stems from insecurity, fear, and a desire for more control than is possible. In a very real sense, regret is the belief that a prior version of yourself should have been perfect and avoided all mistakes, however small, using the knowledge that a current version of yourself has. But here's the thing. The person you are in this moment and the person who made that mistake aren't the same person. The version of you who made that mistake didn't have the insight you have now. They can't because they didn't have the experience and hindsight you do right now. The version who made that decision was operating under different stress with limited context and just doing the best they could. When we can't forgive ourselves, we get stuck in guilt, shame, and paralysis. This creates internal stress and keeps us repeating the same patterns. Not because we're inherently flawed, but because we're too stuck in the past to grow into an alternative. So, this is the exercise. Think of something you regret. Instead of beating yourself up about it, walk through these three questions. What was my goal, or what was I trying to achieve or prevent at the time? What have I learned since? What would I do differently next time? after you've answered those three questions, end with this affirmation. If I could have done better, I would have. Now that I know more, I will do better. That's not excusing prior bad behavior, that's growth. All right, I know we said we'd have three, but here's a bonus, healthy hero reflection. This is one more micro moment activity that I love to use, and I call it the healthy hero reflection. So think of someone you admire, write down their name, and then write down one quality or trait that they embody and you admire. Now ask, where does that trait exist in me? Dr. Rangan Chatterjee says we're drawn to certain heroes because our brain recognizes their traits in us, even if those traits are currently dormant. The admiration you're feeling is a mirror. What you see in people you admire is possible in you. Here's the truth. Most of what we fear never happens. And when it does, we rise to meet it better than we imagined. But anxiety tells us we won't. Rumination tells us we already failed. Regret and perfectionism tell us that we have to control everything to be safe. And all of that is a form of suffering we can interrupt, starting with a single micro moment. Time spent in anxiety and rumination can be converted into micro moments that serve as proof to yourself that you have agency, not just over your time, but over your attention, your energy, and your experience of life. You can't predict or control the future, but your future is pretty much guaranteed to be better if you're present in the moment you're in. Thanks for spending this one with me. If you try any of the exercises that we talked about here, I'd love to hear how they work for you. Thanks for spending this micro moment with me. If you found it valuable, share it with a fellow time billionaire and give us a rating to help others discover the power of micro moments. For more ways to reclaim your time, check out timebillionaires.org and follow me, Rebecca Shaddix, on LinkedIn. See you next time.